let's talk through Rashi's layer. We now discussed in our first 2 weeks the authorship and its status in Tanakh. Then we spent time on the approach of Shir HaShirim Rabbah. My next stop is Rashi. Rashi reads Shir HaShirim as a love song between God and the Jews, which we're already familiar with from the Midrash. But Rashi goes a different route with this, and it's fascinating to see him do it. Rashi on Shir HaShirim is absolutely glorious. And unfortunately, people miss it because they're really frustrated because they want to read the text literally. And why won't Rashi do that? But what you see in Rashi on Shir HaShirim is, first of all, he never forgets his role as an explainer of language, of words and their meanings. In Rashi's commentary, as we will see, he talks about words and what they mean just on Chumash. He also imports Midrash, but he does it to fit a narrative that he sees in the text and the Midrash never addressed. Meaning, one of the points that I made last week when we started talking about the Midrash is that the Midrash doesn't read a story into Shir HaShirim. Each line is taken in a vacuum. That's not Rashi's approach. Rashi believes that this book, Shir HaShirim, has a narrative beginning to end. It tells a story. And Rashi weaves both things together, the explanation of words and their meanings, and the Midrashim, in what is a remarkable tapestry. And we're going to start our look at Rashi with his introduction to Shir HaShirim. This is really remarkable. It's must reading for anyone who wants to understand anything about Rashi. Forget about Shir HaShirim. It's, to the best of my knowledge, the only place where Rashi sets out his philosophy of Perush. It could be he does it somewhere else that I haven't seen. I'm hardly a Rashi expert. But if you take a look at source number 8, I brought you Rashi's explanation of what he's doing in his commentary to Shir HaShirim. Yeah, Rose.
First of all, you know, Rashi's a Pashtun, and he only does the Midrashim if it doesn't fit. And Shir HaShirim is an entire thing that doesn't fit, really.
Yes and no. I will say yes and no. It is true that Rashi uses Midrashim to explain things that otherwise don't fit. That's the job of Midrash. But there's more to be said about how Rashi does it and the decisions Rashi makes. Take a look at what he says here, because I think this goes a long way towards explaining it. He begins by quoting a verse that isn't from Shir HaShirim. Achaz diber Elokim shtayim zu shamati. God said, one thing, I heard two. Mikra echad yotzei lekama ta'amim. One verse has multiple explanations. V'sof davar ein lecha mikra yotzei midei pshuta u'mashma'o. This is a line Rashi made famous. He says it in a few places. He says, you can't have a text that leaves its pshat and its meaning. Ve'ava pisha dibra nevi'im divrehem bidugma, even though the prophets used metaphors, tzarech le'yashiv hadugma l'ofaneha ve'al sidra, you have to actually explain the metaphor. The metaphor has to have meaning in and of itself. The story has to be a story. Kemosha mikraot sidurim ze'achar ze'ah, as the verses are arranged, one after the other. He says, you can't abandon the layer of the metaphor in your urge to rush after the deeper meaning. So you need to explain the story, and you need to explain the layer underneath the story. And then he writes, that's a general statement. Now he says about Shir HaShirim. V'ra'isi l'sefer hazeh kama midrashei agada. I have seen on this book multiple midrashim of agada. Agada, that which is not about Jewish law. It's lessons, ideas, stories. Yesh sodrim kol ha-sefer hazeh b'midrash echad. Some arrange this entire book in one midrash. V'yesh mefuzarim b'kama midrashei agada. And some are scattered in many midrashim. Mikraot levadan. Individual verses here and there. Ve'inam mityashvim al-lashon ha-mikra v'seder ha-mikraot. They don't fit the language of the text. They don't fit the order of the verses. V'amarti b'livi. I said to myself, Litpos mashma'ut ha-mikra li-yashev bi'uram al-sidram. I wanted to grab the meaning of the text in order to settle the explanations in order. V'amidrashot miravoseinu ekba'im midrash ishish b'mkomo. And I'm going to take the midrashim from our rebbeim, from our ancestors, from our masters, and I will set them each one in its place. So my goal, says Rashi, is to read Shir HaShirim in order, to see the story, and to put the midrashim where they belong in explaining the story. That's what Rashi wants to do. I want to explain the text of Shir HaShirim in series and just use the midrashim as a way to explain the narrative. Rashi is identifying a goal for Shir HaShirim, which wasn't visible in Shir HaShirim Rabbah. It's supported by Shir HaShirim Rabbah. Right? This idea of reassurance of the Jews, that they have a connection with Hashem, especially towards the end of Shir HaShirim Rabbah, is certainly there. But look the way Rashi understands the story. He says, third paragraph, Va'omer ani, he says, and I say, Shera'a Shlomo beruach HaKodesh Shasidin Yisrael Ligalos Gola Achar Gola Churban Achar Churban. Shlomo HaMelech knew with divine inspiration that the Jews are going into exile, and not just into one exile, into a series of exiles. Right? You already know this, a lot of you, because you learned Malachim with me last year. And you will recall that when Shlomo is building the Beis HaMikdash, first of all, he has, if not direct prophecy, Ruach HaKodesh, we had a debate as to whether he's actually a full prophet or not. But Shlomo definitely has knowledge that the Beis HaMikdash is not going to go smoothly. Back in Malachim, in chapter 6, Hashem warns him, I'm only with this Beis HaMikdash as long as the Jews follow the mitzvot. We even had a Gemara in Yuma that said that Shlomo identified a place to bury the Aron, to bury the Ark, anticipating that the destruction was going to be coming. So Rashi says, Shlomo knows bad things are coming. And so, going back to the text, Ulehitonein begalut ze al kvodam harishon, he knew the Jews would grieve for their earlier honor. And to recall the original love of Hashem for the Jews when we were special to Him from all the nations. Lemor, and the Jews would then say, like Hosea says, Elcha ve'ashuva el ishi harishon ki tov li az me'ata. I will return to God. It was better for me then than it is now. When the Jews are in exile, they will remember. V'yizkiru es chasadav v'ez ma'alam asher mo'alu. The Jews would remember Hashem's kindness to them. The Jews would remember their own trespasses. Mo'alam asher mo'alu. V'ez hatavos asher amar l'seis lahem b'achris hayamim. And the good things that Hashem promised that they would get at the end. Shlomo knows the Jews are supposed to come back to God. V'yasad sefer hazeh beruach hakodesh. And Shlomo establishes this book with divine inspiration. Bilashon ishat srura amenut chayut mishtokeket al ba'ala mitrapeket al doda. Shlomo imagines the Jews. Wow, I just took a look at the transcript. That was not what I said. Okay, nonetheless. Shlomo imagines the Jews as a woman bound in living widowhood. She is separate from her husband, and she yearns for her husband. Remazkeret ahavat nu'urim, a love, reminding him of the love of their youth. Umodal pisha, and acknowledging the sin. Af dodat sarlo b'tzarata, and her beloved is also upset in her pain. He is pained as well. Umazkir chazdei ne'ureha, he calls to mind the kindness of her youth, v'noy yofya, and her beauty, v'kishron pe'aleha, and how good she was, v'hem nikshari'ma be'ahava azah, through which he had been bound to her with a mighty love. Lahodiyam, what is Shlomo doing with this book? He wants to inform them, ki lo milibo ina, it wasn't God's desire to do this to her. V'lo shiluche shiluchin, he didn't want to send her away. Ki odi ishto, she is still his wife. Vehu isha, she is he is her husband. V'u'asid l'shuv eleha, and he is going to come back to her. So the message of Shir HaShirim is a narrative which begins with the Jews in love with each other. It continues to show the Jews being separated from God and the promise that they will come back. They will be reunited with Hashem again. That's the idea. It fits the Midrashim about Hashem's love for us in Shir HaShirim Rabbah really, really well. I wonder if it doesn't fit Shlomo writing Shir HaShirim later in life, after he's already gotten messages from God about how the kingdom is going to be torn apart and so on. Remember, we said in the introduction that it's unclear at what point in his life Shlomo writes this. But if he writes it at a time when he already knows that they're in trouble, that would actually fit really well. But the way that he reads this then, and then I'll pause for questions, is there's a ra'aya, the primary woman in this story, that's the Jews who long for their beloved. There is a dod. The dod is Hashem, God who longs for the Jews. And then the benot Yerushalayim, the daughters of Jerusalem, are the nations of the world. And why they're called daughters of Jerusalem, we're going to come back to. But that's the idea. Questions and comments? Yes, Vanessa.
I'm just questioning the last line, and it says that he will return to her.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be backwards? Is that, well, God is always with us, so why isn't that we are returning to him?
So it's a good question. I think there's a reciprocal return that's needed. We are supposed to come back to God, but it's recognized that, you know, there's a phrase, hester panim, that God's face is hidden. And when God's face is hidden, he is distant from us. And so when he sees us return to him, then he will return to us, no longer will he hide. I think that's what Rashi is saying. Other questions or comments? Okay. So, to explain then what Rashi is doing here with the Midrashim, what is Rashi's relationship with the Midrash? Rashi is certainly not abandoning the Midrashim. He imports them in his commentary. He's absolutely making use of them. He also sees the book the way that the Midrash does, as being about God's loving relationship with us. He imports the Midrashim to explain the praises of us for Hashem and Hashem for us. You'll see it in chapter 7 in particular, but he does it in a few places. Rashi is just arguing to read the book as a story. So what Rashi's doing that is just genius is, number one, he wants to read it in a way that explains the surface level metaphor. He's not ignoring the love story. He's going to go, and I'm going to show you examples, he's going to go through it and try to show the way. You can read it as a straight text. However, he also wants to read it as a story, and he takes Midrashim, which never looked at it as a story, and he fits them in to show these Midrashim are also able to be read the way I read the book. It's a fascinating thing that he's doing. One other introductory point before we actually see Rashi's commentary. A third dimension to Rabbi Akiva on Shir HaShirim. We said that Rabbi Akiva is a supporter of it. He calls it Kodesh Kadashim, Holy of Holies. We gave one explanation as it, because it's about the Jews' love for God, and Rabbi Akiva talking about the importance of love of Hashem with all of your life. We saw also that it fits Rabbi Akiva on Hashem's love for us as the purifier of the Jews. But when you read Shir HaShirim as a narrative arc, beginning with Hashem's closeness to us, going through the hard times when we are exiled and we're separated from God, but with hope at the end for us to be reunited, that hope for reunion is quintessential Rabbi Akiva. That may be the most famous story in Rabbi Akiva's life. It's one of those stories that people quote all the time. Source number 9, the Gemara at the end of Makos. Rabbi, I only brought you a piece of it here. I didn't bring the full story. The story is that Rabbi Akiva and the sages, after the temple has been destroyed, are walking in Jerusalem. And they see the Temple Mount, and they see that there are foxes running around on the Temple Mount. And that Rabbi Akiva's colleagues are crying when they see this. They say, that's so terrible. Foxes in the place where the Kohen Gadol could only go on Yom Kippur? That's awful. It expresses utter desolation. And Rabbi Akiva laughs. And they say to him, why are you laughing? And that's source number 9. Lekach ani mitzachek. He says, you want to know why I laugh? I laugh because of the foxes. Why? Because I have a pasuk in Yeshaya in which Hashem says, I will call loyal witnesses, Uriah the Kohen, Zechariah ben Yevrachia. And he says, what is Uriah's association with Zechariah? Uriah is in the first temple. Zechariah is in the second temple. But we're linking the two because of their prophecies. Because regarding Uriah, it says, Zion will be plowed like a field. And in Zechariah, it says, in the future, the elders will sit in the streets of Jerusalem. Now that we've seen the fulfillment of the destruction of Zion, plowed like a field, we will know, we will also see the fulfillment of the prophecy that the elders will again sit in the streets of Jerusalem. So Rabbi Akiva offers hope. And that's another layer of Shir HaShirim, offering hope for the reunion of the Jews with Hashem. You follow what I'm saying? It's another way in which Rabbi Akiva fits this book really, really well. Ricky, you were going to say?
Yes, about hope, and also maybe a message of it's time to get back and to fulfill the promise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's there as well. I think it's there as well. So to any other comments? I realize I'm monologuing a lot. I want to make sure I'm not shutting anybody out. So Rashi, as I said, is also explaining the metaphor layer. Rashi is not ignoring the metaphor itself. In his commentary, he goes after language also. So I gave you an example. You have your Shir HaShirim. Take a look at chapter 5, sentence 1. This is the Dod speaking, the male voice. Basi legani achosi chala. I came to my garden, my sister, the bride. Sister here again being an expression of love. It's a term of endearment. He's not marrying his sister. Arisi mori imbisami. The word arisi, ariti, is not an easy word. More, I know. More is a spice, myrrh. With my besamim, with my perfume spices, right? And it goes on. But what is arisi? So take a look at Rashi in source number 10. Rashi explains, arisi means likatati, I collected. And he gives you an example from the Mishnah where it talks about the width of a certain area, kimlo ore v'salo. Like the breath, the space taken up by the ore and his basket. The ore is the person who's collecting from the plants. V'af lashon mikra, and also he quotes you from Tehillim, v'aruha kol ovrei darech. All of the passers-by, aruha, they collect from, in that case, it's a vineyard. V'ne'amar al shem haketoris, it's referring to the incense here, and then Rashi goes on. It's a straightforward comment. All Rashi is doing is he wants you to understand the literal text. I'll give you one more example of it. I loved this comment. I was going to find a way to stick this in no matter what, because it's just very funny. Chapter 7, sentence 5 in Shir HaShirim. This is a section in which the dod, the male, is describing the beauty of the raya, of the female. And he says, Tzavarech kimigdal hashen, your neck is like an ivory tower. Einayich brechos b'cheshbon al shar bas rabim, your eyes are like pools. Apech kimigdal halavanon tzofeh p'nei damasek. Anyone here have an English translation that does an actual translation? Like a GPS or something like that? So tell me, what is the translation of Apech Kimigdal Halavanon?
I only have a whole sentence here.
So I want the last part, after what I did about the pools in Cheshbon.
Your face is as the Tower of Lebanon.
Your face. There we go. So your face is as the Tower of Lebanon. So that's building on what Rashi does here. Take a look at source number 11. Apech Kimigdal Halavanon. So Rashi is bothered because apech sounds like ha'af shalach. Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon. And he says, Eini yachol lefarsho lashon chotem. I can't explain this to me nose. Lo le'inyam pshat, v'lo le'inyam dugma. Not as pshat and not as a metaphor. Ki ma kilus no yesh b'chotem gadol v'zakuf kimigdal. He says, what kind of phrase is that to say that you have a big nose and that it's upright like a tower? A fine Roman nose. That's not a praise for a Jew. V'omer ani apeich lashon panim. So Rashi says, apeich means your face. And he goes on to explain, I skipped some of it. But he says, the metzach, the forehead, that's something that you use to identify a person. And then he says, it also fits, just the praise working its way up on the body. If you go back to the verses in the beginning of chapter 7, it's working its way upward. In the beginning of sentence 5, it talked about the neck, and then it talks about the eyes, and then it talks about the forehead. And that's the idea there. I just thought that was very funny. Interestingly, if you looked in Shir HaShirim Rabbah, the Medrash on it, it takes apeich as nose. It says, the Medrash in Shir HaShirim Rabbah takes it as nose, and Rashi is deviating because he says it can't be in this, it can't be explained that way. Interestingly, in some of the sections, like the section of praise in chapter 5, sentences 9 to 16, where it describes the beauty of the dode, Rashi will go through the section twice in his commentary. He goes through it once explaining the language, and then a second time importing the Midrashim. So it's already 226, but take a look at source number 12. I gave you an example of it. There's a line at Dodi Tzach Ve'Adom. My beloved is Tzach, pure white, and Adom, red. So Rashi gives you two layers. His first layer, Tzach, he says, is Lavan, is white, and he gives you a reference in Eicha. And Adom is red, and he says, this is praise for the beauty of a youth when he is of white skin and his face is red. And again, this goes back to an aesthetic from their time that they were referring to, and I feel no particular need to defend it. But it's the white and red that are the literal read. And then he says, Dodi Tzach, my beloved is white, v'lavan l'halbin avonotai. He bleaches my sins. He gets rid of my sins. He sees me as pure. Tzach v'lavan kishener ebisinai. When God was seen at Sinai, he was white. Nira kezakein moreh haraot, like an old man issuing halachic rulings. And he gives you a reference in Daniel to Hashem's garb being white. V'adom and red. Liparam mison av, to punish his enemies. And he gives you the reference from Yeshaya. Why is your garb red? Madua adom lilavushecha, a reference to somebody going out to battle. Rashi does this in Chumash a few times also, like with the gifts of the princes of the Nesiim in Parshas Naso, in explaining the poem in Ha'azinu. But Rashi does this in Shir HaShirim. He'll go through literal layer, and then he'll go through a layer incorporating Midrash. I actually do want to come back to the business of black and white. Maybe it'll be in a future week. But I do want to come back to that because it does require a little bit more unpacking. I shouldn't cheat on that point. Yes, Ricky?
When a young man is white of skin, young people can blush, especially yeah. If they see somebody that they like. That would be a sign of youth.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an expression of youth, you know, with flushed cheeks type of a thing. I think that's true.
Yeah, not just flush, but also blushing.
Could be. So what I want to do next time is take you through Rashi's read of the book to show you how he unpacks the narrative in the book. What does he see here? We're not reading every Rashi, but I do want to get through that. It'd probably take us about half the time next time. And then I want to go the completely opposite direction and show you the Rambam school. Again, just like this is not only Rashi's school, Rambam school is not only Rambam, in which he says this isn't about the history of the Jews. It is about the individual's relationship with God. A completely different layer in Shir HaShirim. So God willing, we'll be back again next week to see more. Thank you very much, everyone.